Hello, everyone. My name is Tom Regan, and welcome to Recovery Chronicles. I am a licensed addiction counselor for Heartview Foundation in Bismarck, North Dakota. I'm also a certified grief counselor. We call this program Recovery Chronicles, and it's a celebration of recovery. It really is, and the number one mission of the program is to spread hope and let people know that recovery from addiction is possible. Special guest today is Joseph Johnner, and I've pronounced your last name correctly, right? And guess what? Joseph is the first official twofer. This is the first time we've had someone on the program for a second time, and I'm happy to say that. We first interviewed Joseph in November of 2017, but a lot has happened since then, and we were talking about that before we started recording. I'm going to put you on the spot and say, what did you mean by that? So you said you're really in a different place as far as your recovery is concerned from November of 2017 compared to right now. So what did you mean by that?
Well, I mean, my mentality and just my emotional growth, I mean, I really evolved with the time. I mean, I was in a good place then. I mean, I'm just in that much of a better place now. I mean, just the things that I've been involved with. I mean, back then I was already involved with a lot of things then, but since then I've become a lot more active in the recovery world as well. You know what I mean? The First Lady's got a lot of things going on with the Recovery Reinvented, the training that I did with the peer support specialist training, as well as, you know, going into the jail as volunteer. But one huge thing is I started going to school. You know, I'm in the social work program right now, and I will be transferring to the addiction studies program at Minot.
Nice, yeah. So you're transferring to the Minot program, but you get to do that here, don't you?
Right. Yeah, it'll be at BSC campus.
So you've decided that you would like to be a licensed addiction counselor.
Well,
that'd be wonderful.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like, so this is my perspective on that. I mean, I've lived out the majority of my life as for myself. I lived the majority of my life for myself, but not only for myself.
How old are you?
I'm 37.
Okay.
I was always a taker. I took from people all the time. I was a hurter. I always hurt people. You know what I mean? That's what selfish behavior does. You know what I mean? Especially, you know, addiction behavior. You know what I mean? So, but now since I've, you know.
And you've spent some time at the walls, right?
I went into prison when I was 20 years old and got out when I was 25, you know, mm-hmm. and juvie three times and in and out of jail dozens of times, you know, and, but yeah, so mm-hmm. I lived my life for me, which was a wrong way, you know, hurting people, taking from people. So now I just want to be at service to people, you know what I mean? I want to live for others, help people, and serve people. Mm-hmm. And I want to be a giver, not a taker, and I want to be a helper instead of a herder, you know what I mean? Yeah. So that's kind of where my philosophy is on that, you know?
Sure, sure. I've certainly seen that growth. I've known you for quite a while now. So remind us where you're from.
You know, I'm originally from Linton. I grew up in Linton, a little German community down there, you know. But, yeah, I grew up down there and moved up here, back up here to Bismarck when I was in my late teens, I guess.
Okay. I know one of the things you've done, one of the things you've accomplished is you have become a peer support specialist.
Right. Yep.
How did you do that, and what are you doing with that?
So with that, there's, you know, the First Lady's, you know, her campaign is Recovery Reinvented, you know, trying to remove the stigma that's associated with addiction. And she's got the Recovery Reinvented's, as well as the A Day for Prevention for a Day and Recovery Day. So they also have the Free Through Recovery. Mm-hmm. So what I do is I did some training. You know, I was in the first class that they actually had in North Dakota.
It was 40 hours worth of training, right?
Right? Yep. And then I took an exam or a test and passed that. And so now I'm certified through the state of North Dakota and to help individuals that identify themselves as someone with mental illness or substance use disorder, you know what I mean? And for the Free Through Recovery part of it, they actually have to have a referral from parole and probation, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? So it's mm-hmm. got to be an individual that's currently, you know, in the legal system or
Sure. And you said you're actually going to be working out of a Lutheran Social Services?
I just recently signed an independent or a contract as an independent contractor with Lutheran Social Services to be offering support to people that are just getting released from incarceration or that maybe, you know, just end up having some charges and they're in the legal system, you know.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
So how do peer support specialists help people?
So basically, I think the way I look at it is it's kind of it's a cross between a sponsor slash recovery coach slash mentor, but more importantly, it's we have the lived experience, you know. So the training that we got, we were told that we're trying to, you know, bridge the gap between social workers and licensed addiction counselors with individuals that are struggling with addiction. You know what I mean? We can be at appointments with them, whether it's a parole, probation appointments, you know, if they have, you know, doctor appointments, you know, and just kind of be there to support them. You know, they want that lived experience, and that's, you know, I think that's huge. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like the way they described it is similar to a social worker, licensed addiction counselor without the degree. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And it's actually then the upside to it when after I signed up to do it, I didn't find out until after I signed up that I actually can get paid for doing it. You know, I'm actually, it's Medicaid billable.
Nice.
So I'll be getting paid, and that's a bonus. I mean, I went when I first, you know, signed up to do it, I went with the intentions of not knowing I was going to get paid. I was doing it just to try to give back, you know what I mean? Try to make a difference. And the upside is, you know, find out that I get to get paid, which is nice.
Yeah, that's awesome. And you mentioned you're doing volunteer work. Is it volunteer work in the jail? Which jail now?
So it's called the Burley Morton County Detention Center, the new jail. So anyways, I go under the Native American Development Center. So I go there every other Saturday. I facilitate a group out there, and I designed my own curriculum and everything else that I present to the group and yeah, man, that is really, really exciting, because many times I've been in jail and I see the correctional officers out there, man, and you know, I got history with those guys, you know what I mean? And in order for somebody like me to change and for them to trust me enough and allow me to go back in there and you know, I'm in communication with Jen, the lady that kind of heads up this program, and I mean, it's really good. And the feedback that I've gotten from the guys out there, from the inmates, you know, it's really good, man. It's just, my thing is, it's, you know, my mission for that is that I'm trying to break that cycle, that revolving door of incarceration and in and out of jail, in and out of prison and stuff like that. You know, the thing is that just because it's like that, because they are living that way, it doesn't mean it has to be that way. You know what I mean?
And you're a perfect example.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, with my history of crime and violence.
Yeah.
And if someone like me could change, man, it's possible for anybody to change.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. That's right. So, and you said you designed your own curriculum. So what kinds of things are you covering?
So basically, I just got I should have actually brought some, but I actually got just different topics that we talk about. I got some videos, and my main thing is I think we talked about this before. It's called motivational interviewing, but I never even knew that's what it was called. That's kind of what I did, you know.
Sure.
But, you know, try to get the guys active and involved. I mean, we got to get...
Give us an example of motivational interviewing. I'm familiar with it as an addiction counselor, but it kind of involves, for example, asking a lot of questions, right?
Yeah, so definitely.
What would be a good example?
So I'll ask questions because, you know, I can come out there, I can go out there and preach and tell my story. And it's good. It might help, you know, and it will help.
Sure.
But the thing is, you want to get the people involved. You want to get the guys... You know, you want to spark something up inside of them, but you want it to be from them because, if it comes from somebody else, it might resonate a little bit. However, if it comes from them, it's their idea and stuff like that. And it gets a spark going in them and they start going and they get moved by it. You know, and I've had a lot of positive feedback from inmates in there, you know what I mean, while they were in there and after they got out, you know what I mean? So I continue to support afterwards when they get out. I give them my contact information because, unfortunately, some of the guys out there, the environment that they get released back into is the same environment that they were in before they went to jail. So, you know, and they might not have that much positive support out there. They might not have any at all. So, you know what I mean? At least I give out my contact information to continue that relationship, you know, and try to be that support system just in case you don't have one.
What are the rewards in it for you? You know, how do you feel when you had a good session there and you're walking out of the place?
To be honest with you, I one morning I woke up, man, and I got a text message, three text messages from a number I didn't know. And I'm like, who is this? So I'm checking it out. And the guy said his name, and I'm like, okay. So I thought it was a client from the facility I work at, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, well, no, I didn't get my, I'm not allowed to get my contact information out there. So I know it wasn't from that person. So then all of a sudden I read more. And sure enough, man, just from what this dude said, you know, this dude was in, you know, federal prison multiple times, all tattoos all over the place and everything. And just what he said was so encouraging, man. Literally, I broke down that right there in my bed that morning and just thanked the Lord, you know, for that opportunity to make that difference. You know, with this individual, he actually been in and out of federal prison multiple times and never actually thought that he had a chance or that there could have been anything different, you know. And then from the very first group that I had, he said, you know what? He said, something that you said in the group, he said, caused me to think, and I've been thinking this whole time. He said, you know what? I'm going to go to treatment. You know, so the day that he got out, he hopped on a plane to Phoenix to go to go to drug and alcohol treatment. And he said, you know what? He said, you instilled something. He said, you instilled something in me that I didn't think that existed. He said, and you gave me hope. He said, if you can do it, he said, I know I can do it. You know, and I'm not looking for recognition from anybody. I'm not looking for an attaboy, good job, pat on the back type thing. I'm looking to just try to make a difference. You know what I mean? You know what?
Yes.
It's because life really is, there really is, like you said in the beginning, there is life after addiction. You know, hope is possible, you know what I mean? And that's just it, man. It's just, it doesn't have to be that way. And I just want to help people to realize that, you know? And some of the things that I talked to the guys out there about, you know, I had one of the correctional officers, he's like, oh, thanks for, you know, coming in here and volunteering and giving these guys some guidance. And I'm like, you know what? I said, I'm not guiding these guys. He's like, what? You're not guiding them? I said, no, you know what? I said, all these individuals, just like me and a lot of people, you know, we got, they possess the qualities that they need, you know, to make the right choices, to make the changes, you know, to be successful. Unfortunately, they just got, it's been buried under years and years of garbage, under years of substance abuse or mental abuse, physical abuse by family, friends, and more importantly, by ourselves. We abuse ourselves more than anything, you know, mentally and emotionally and everything else.
Yep.
So all I said, all I'm trying to do is just help them to remind them that they possess what they need. And I'm grabbing a shovel and helping them dig out, you know what I mean? I won't do the work for them, but I'll definitely be right there beside them, putting in some work and helping them out, you know what I mean? And I never had anybody coming at me like that when I was in prison or in jail trying to help me out, you know? And that's just it, you know? And I'm not saying I'm the cure all or anything like that, but I'm definitely, I'll do what I can to help people out, man, you know what I mean?
You know, I think that, you're a person in long-term recovery. I'm a person in long-term recovery, and even that is a statement. I mean, our lives say that it is possible.
Right.
Just by your standing up there and saying, "I'm a person in long-term recovery, and I've been in recovery for this many years," it's powerful. It does. And that Joseph, by the way, our guest is Joseph Johnner, that's the number one mission of this program, Recovery Chronicles. As you know, we've recorded about 50 of these now, these interviews, all with individuals in long-term recovery from our community. And the number one mission of the program is to create some hope, you know, show people that it's possible.
And that's just it. Like the thing is, I mean, addiction, whether people know it or not, addiction affects every single person in this community, whether them personally themselves that struggle with addiction, whether it's a friend, a family member, a coworker, an acquaintance, or even if you've worked one day and paid taxes, taxpayer dollars.
Yes.
I mean, every single person is affected by addiction. Is it everybody's responsibility? No, it's not everybody's responsibility to get other people sober. But when people are willing to take that step, there are things that people in the community can do to help out, whether it's take somebody to a meeting or give somebody something as simple as some words of encouragement. You know what I mean? Sometimes that's all a person needs. And that's more than what they need. You know what I mean? But sometimes people don't get that for years or have never even heard that their whole life, you know? And the whole thing is like this radio program is the perfect example of that, you know, to talk about it, you know, to give a name and a face to addiction so people know about it. You know, that's the if anybody can't, you know, donate money to something or give somebody a ride or don't they can't, you know, give up a little bit of their time. The best thing that anybody could do, the easiest thing is talk about it. Talk about addiction. Try to educate yourself or inform others if you are educated about it. You know what I mean? And just to talk about it to so that it's not one of those things that people sweep under the rug or, you know, to help like the first lady is doing, help remove that stigma, you know, that's associated with addiction.
Yeah. I think just to declare yourself as a member of the recovery community, to come out of the closet that way, it is just really pretty powerful.
Definitely. I wasn't proud of being an addict, but I'm definitely proud of being an individual who's in recovery because you know what? This disease is killing millions of people, you know, hundreds of people a day. And today I woke up sober and I'm winning today. You know what I mean? So I'm proud to be in recovery. You know what I mean? I'm proud to be able to go what I've been through and to be able to be here today live and well and be able to talk about it and try to, I guess, inspire somebody or give somebody some hope.
And you do. I see you at work in at RAD. You know, we're both members of Runners Against Destructive Decisions. And you're an excellent runner. I mean, and you've come a long way there with your running schedule and everything. And why don't you talk about that a little bit? Because you're one of the individuals planning to go to, is it Ecuador?
South America.
Talk about that a little bit. I'll keep my eyes on the clock. We still have about 12 minutes left. So
so with Rad, man, Rad has really been like you know, the Judge Reich, man, he's been...
Judge David Reich.
Yep, he's been awesome, man. Like he's hit him personally, but Rad as well. They've been a fundamental in my recovery, man. Just what he's helped change. He's helped do things with that he doesn't even know he's doing. Like my whole perspective about law enforcement has changed and everything else because of what he's doing. You know what I mean?
Right.
And Rad is really it. It's such a healthy outlet. When I first started going to RAD, it was my addiction counselor. She introduced me to RAD, and I would have never went if I would have known it was a judge, to be honest with you, you know? And she kept it from me on purpose. She told me that, you know, which is good, though. I'm glad she did because of that, I've developed a lot of good relationships, and it's helped me tremendously in my recovery. But you know, it just... When I started running, I wasn't a runner. I was new into recovery. I was still smoking and everything else, and... But I stuck with it, you know.
I think that's when I first met you a person. Okay.
Yep, you know, I stuck with it because, you know, I was desperate to change. I just knew I didn't want to continue that life that I was living. So I was willing to try anything and everything to change, you know what I mean? So I started running. I wasn't a runner. Sometimes it's hard for me to believe that I am a runner now, you know what I mean? But I definitely wasn't a runner then. And I stuck with it, you know, because if you really want to, you know, see if something works, you got to stick it out and try it. You know what I mean? They say it takes 21 days to form a habit, 21 days to break habits, you know? So I knew it was going to be at least 21 days. But in that process, man, like that, the outlet that running creates for me is just phenomenal. I can't even describe how great of an outlet it is to run for, you know, it's a healthy outlet for stress, anxiety, depression, anger. I mean, it's huge in my recovery, you know what I mean? Anytime I have a bad day, or not, I don't really know if I have bad days. I mean, I have days that are not as good as the day before.
Sure.
But I don't even, you know what I mean? But there's certain things that I still have issues and, you know, things that I go through, you know, like bills and everything else. Just like
welcome to life. Yes.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly. You know, and I get stressed out, you know, school, midterms coming up, you know, everything else.
Oh, yeah.
And but running, I go out and run, man, and I sit there and I think or I pray while I'm running, man, and I, by the time I get done, my mind is just clear.
Yeah. So, Runners Against Destructive Decisions, founded here in Bismarck by Judge David Reich. So, RAD has linked up with a running club in Los Angeles, California, also founded by a judge.
Right, right. Yeah.
And this particular running group takes an annual trip, and they do some fundraising to different countries. I know one of them was Ghana, was it not? Ghana, and then...
In Jerusalem.
Jerusalem was... and then Rome. But
Rome, yep.
This next time here, they're going to Ecuador, and you and another runner or two in our group have your sights set on that. And
yeah, it's just
we're doing some fundraising.
Yeah, and it was in the Bismarck Tribune and everything else, and they had that video for Skid Row Marathon, you know. And me and my buddy Jack, and the judge, you know. And yeah, great. So we're gonna be. It's in October, and it'll be my first full marathon.
Wow,
it'll be Jack.
So how many miles are you running now?
26.2.
What? I didn't even know that.
Yeah,
good for you. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So, I mean, making history, just running a marathon, man, but to do it in another country, I've never been out of the country, you know what I mean? And it's just, that's amazing. I think, honestly, like, it still hasn't even sunk in yet. You know, I think about it all the time, but it really hasn't even sunk in yet.
Yeah. So, you know, for people listening, and maybe they know they're in trouble right now, you know, they're listening to the radio program here, and they know they have to make a change, but maybe moms and dads are listening, brothers and sisters of, you know, people who are in trouble with drugs. What are the secrets to your recovery? I mean, what are some of the things that made a difference? How did you cross over from using into recovery?
Well, like we talked about before, it was my daughter is what changed my whole perspective. You know what I mean? I wanted to be a better person.
Yeah. How old is she now?
And she's 4 and a half.
Okay.
And I want to be a better person, you know, and in that process of trying to be a better person, I found God. I was never a spiritual or a believer of anything supernatural. In that process, I found Jesus Christ and just really changed my life from that point on. And then just continue to do it, man. I just, other opportunities opened up after I got sober. And a lot just, you know, I never really thought this was going to be like my thing, you know what I mean? And now I, you know, the longer I'm in it, the more I know that this is my calling, you know, it's just to try to change the world is what I'm trying to do, you know what I mean? And I know that I can, man. And that's what I'm going to do. And, you know, mark my words.
Yeah. Yeah. So it sounds like, therefore, you know, one of the secrets to your recovery, one of your personal secrets is helping others.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, that's huge. I mean, we all know that if we want to, it'll strengthen us a little bit to help others, you know, to see people and to help them, you know, we gotta, I think you've said it before, yeah, in order to keep something, you gotta give it away, right. You know? And, it's true. I mean, the reward that I get from helping people, man, I mean, you couldn't put a dollar amount on it, you know, that there's no monetary amount that you could.
Yes.
That you could put on it to satisfy me. You know, if I was worried about that, I would still be continuing to operate heavy equipment. You know what I mean? If I was worried about money.
Yes.
And this reward is far greater than any monetary reward I could ever receive, man.
Sure. You know? As you know, I'm a licensed addiction counselor, and I will tell you, you don't do it for the money. You know, we don't get paid an awful lot, but it is true. It is the rewards, you know. And so, obviously, spirituality is also one of the keys to your recovery. And have you felt yourself grow spiritually with recovery?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I was actually going to go to school to be a preacher instead of go to school in, right now, instead of going to college.
Be in your future, too.
And yeah, that's definitely not out of the picture, you know what I mean? It's going to be something right now. I got my daughter's, like I said, she's 4 and a half, man. I just couldn't bring myself to leave her because I'd be going to Florida for PBI, Pensacola Bible Institute. So I just couldn't leave her for 3 years, only seeing her twice a year, you know what I mean? And every little girl needs their daddy, you know, and she's my little angel, man. So, But yeah, man, I mean, the thing, there's a lot to do with recovery, man. There's so much work, you know, there's so much work out there that everybody could do, you know what I mean? That can make a difference, man. And that's just the thing is just that.
Sure. What do you want people to know? And of course, a very general audience listens to this program too, but what do you want people to know, people who living in our community? What do you want them to know about addiction and about the presence of drugs in our community, anything like that?
Well, I think definitely in our community, it's getting worse in the types of drugs and it's all over now, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
But I want people to know, man, is that addiction isn't a choice. I didn't just wake up and say, hey, I want to be a junkie today. You know what I mean? And I just, I want to lose everything that I have, and I want to hurt people, and I want to lose my job, my home, and my vehicle, and have no money. And I want to, I didn't wake up like that sitting there saying, no, I want to be, you know, and so it's, it wasn't like a choice that I made. Right. It was, from the results of choice, it was the result of choices that I made, but it, that wasn't the choice that I was trying to make. You know what I mean?
Right.
And, but addiction is, it really is a disease. There's parts of about the brain, the physiological parts, that it actually, you know, changes the physical part of our brain, as well as hijacks our decision-making process. You know what I mean? So I just, the main thing is, I just want people to know that addiction isn't, it's not like, oh, people just, we decide that we want to be an addict and stuff like that. You know, it's, when I started using hardcore drugs, man, I did it to cope with the loss of my dad, you know what I mean? And I originally started to deal with, to cope with the, all the discrimination I experienced growing up in Lytton, you know, the racism and everything else.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's...
So with you, it started early on. I mean, as an adolescent or even...
Yeah, I was an addict and an alcoholic by the time I was 14. I was in my first drug and alcohol treatment by the time I was 14 years old, you know what I mean? And I've been in 8 of them. I mean, it's... But the thing is that, you know... It is a disease, and just like any other disease out there, cancers or diabetes is a good example. It's an ongoing recovery, you know what I mean? It's an ongoing process. It's ongoing until the day we die, you know what I mean?
Right.
And it's never ever going to be completely whipped and done and over with. You know, it needs maintenance just like anything else, just like diabetes. You got to continue proper diet, exercise, you know what I mean? Maybe insulin or whatever it is, or medication, stuff like that. Same thing with addiction. You need to find what works for you. There's no one way to success.
Right.
There's multiple, there's millions of ways to success, but whatever way that you find your success, as long as it's not hurting anybody, you got to people got to continue down that same road, and then you find other things down the road what works, and sometimes you find things that don't work as well as you thought they did, but you know what, that's hope, that's part of life, that's part of learning, you know what I mean, and that's part of our evolving, you know. That's,
and just like diabetes or managing diabetes and heart trouble or something like that, it's something that we have to pay attention to every single day. You know, we have to nurture it. I tell patients, I said, you know, we who are in recovery have the responsibility of being on a lifelong program of self-improvement. We cannot afford to take a step backwards or even to spin our wheels, because we will end up in relapse. We have to just keep growing every day.
Exactly. You
know, emotionally, spiritually, mentally, physically, et cetera. And it really sounds like that's what you were doing.
And just that reminds me about a saying that you told me, and it just has stuck with me ever since, man. How does that go? You said something about, I might have one good drunk left in me, but I might not have one good recovery left in me.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? And I think about that all the time. I think about that almost daily, man, because that's the first time I heard that, but there's so much truth to that. There's so many of these little simple cliche sayings that everybody knows, but the thing is, all those sayings, there's truth to those. That's why everybody knows it, and that's what, you know what I mean? And that's just a good example of that, you know?
You know, and sometimes when we get to those community support groups or church or whatever, we hear those sayings and they turn us off at first. You know, I didn't like them. I thought, these people are just living their life by riddles, you know. But now, truthfully, I live by them, you know.
Yeah,
I mean, Joseph, the time went too fast, so we'll have to have you on again, as we're already at the 28-minute mark. Our guest has been Joseph Johnner. And
I do appreciate it, Tom.
Thanks
for
being
our
guest again. Let's close with the serenity prayer. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thanks again.
I sing a song because I love the man. I know that some of you don't understand. Milk blood to keep from running out. I've seen the needle and the damage done, a little part of it in everyone, but every junkie's like a setting sun.